Welcome to episode 5 of Double Dodge. I'm your host, Cam.
And I'm your host, Dave.
And this is the Flying Pink Snake episode. You'll have to listen to the end to actually understand what I'm talking about. We're brought to you by our good friend, Daryl from Nerdvana Games SA. He's our sponsor. And this episode, we've got a bit of a massive one for the punters. Dave, what have we got?
Well, we've gone for Sprawl. We have spread out like a freshly married individual who's just let themselves go to seed, and it's basically just overflowing from, you know, whatever garments you can try and restrict it to. So we've got a big one, and
yeah,
we are very excited to have interviewed Jamie Perkins. That was a great chat. He was very generous with his time, and there's some sort of interesting tidbits in there, a bit of game balance stuff, which I think you were pretty keen to chat about.
It was an interesting chat. I wanted to kind of pick his brain about guild development and how that kind of rolled out. I do believe we have on record possibly him admitting to the game state at the moment in terms of the Mortician. So if you want to listen to that, he might actually give that away.
He you know, I don't want to drop him in any shit, but there was some acknowledgement that perhaps things could have been more finely tuned with Obulus.
And yeah,
you know, I don't think that'll surprise anybody, but you know, he's a total champ. Really, really great to speak to. You know, we also, on the back of that conversation, you know, we're trying to get Jamie to the Australian National Tournament. And on that front, we have instigated a Twitter campaign under the hashtag FreeJamie. And you may have noticed a picture circulating with Jamie being represented by Free Willy. Free Willy is jumping to freedom. Free Willy's head has been replaced with Jamie's head. You know, I think it basically says everything that we're trying to say.
Yeah. I think, well, I actually photoshopped Matt Hart. He's jumping over Matt Hart there at that point. Matt's cheering him on.
Is that Matt Hart?
Well, maybe not.
It's hard to see because it's like it's just a little.
He's got his back to him. Might look like a young tween kind of boy, or it might be Matt Hart. I'm not sure. So we started that campaign because we believe that the Australian community deserves some steam forged representation, and so Jamie was keen. He told us that he was available. We're doing that. So every time you tweet, 1 cent goes towards no one in particular, and that helps pay for Jamie to come over.
Get him here. We deserve some love.
Potentially you could just play the racism card and just, you know, say that they're being racist by not coming. But, I mean, in all fairness, I don't think we can, you know, pot and kettle, potentially.
No. Yeah. But, hey, man, the English sent us here in the first place.
Maybe they
should come and, you know, be responsible for their fucking discarded offspring. Threw us out like so much criminal garbage. This intro's a fucking shit show.
So who did we have after that? We did another interview.
We had an interview with Tim W.
I'm going to try to pronounce his name. Wait, Wisniewski? Is that close?
Oh, that's pretty close.
German, German national champion, and he was an absolute dude. Had a chat to him, and he gave us a bit of insight into his game style and the German meta on the whole. So it was a good little chat,
mate. That guy, what a champ!
Now, he's a little bit loose, but we love that here. Yeah. We are the dodgiest.
We love a loose unit, don't we?
Yeah,
mate.
Yeah.
I've become a bit of a Tim fangirl, so.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. It's just how
I'll keep my eye on Twitter tonight, so.
Yeah. And we've got a Carball as well, because, you know, Carball, that's what we do.
Carball. So that was an interesting one.
Yeah, a bit of veteran rage, you know, you wanted to play some vet rage.
I have warmed to the vet rage. I find, given the guilds that I've played and then the union, pieces that I've played in other lists, I've got used to certain models, and then going over to Vet Rage, he just fills a nice kind of warm hole in my my black heart, where I like to, not black heart, no pun intended, and likes to just murder the fuck out of people. So I kind of like a captain that can do that, and he can do it on not that much, which, yeah. So I wanted to see that matchup. I did ask you to bring out Throbulus, because, you know, why not play against one of the best? So
yeah, yeah, and I got refunded on my Puppet Master as well, so, you know, I was pretty happy with that.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, big episode. We've probably rambled on, or as Deno would say, gibbered on enough.
We gibber a lot, and let's just throw to it, shall we?
Let's do that. We have Jamie Perkins, Senior Game Designer and Coordinator of Organized Play for Steamforged Games, on the line. Very happy to have you, Jamie. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, David. It's good to speak to you guys finally in person.
Yes, yes. Well, we've sent some tweets to Matt, and Campbell's been furiously writing him haikus, but we just figured he'd send you to do his dirty work. So, you know, that's cool. We appreciate the love, man. We really do.
Wouldn't be the first time that's happened, but you'd be better off speaking to me anyway. No one wants to talk to Matt, seriously, do they? No one wants to actually design the game. Just talk to the guy that does, you know, some of the hard work for him.
Yeah, so you're in the trenches, mate, and we respect that. So to kick this chat off, we ask our guest three questions, and the first question we'd like to ask you is, what are you wearing?
I am wearing a black shirt that actually says Gangster Vader on it, and he's actually holding his two fists forward. I think what it's saying in the front, it says Darth Vader on. He's got two gold knuckle dusters on, says Darth Vader on.
Right, I can see it in my mind's eye. That's really helped to set the scene for me. The second question is, you know, we're curious as to how many Jamies there actually are at Steamforged Game, because we've heard a rumor that there's actually one body that the Jamies share, but there's interchangeable heads and you just snap them on as needed. Did you want to comment?
Yeah, I'd explain it as more of a sort of gestalt entity, really. It depends on which one of us wants to speak at the time. I think at the moment there are three identities that come out every now and then, but occasionally we just spawn a new one to keep people on their toes.
Wow. That sounds like a psychiatrist's wet dream, really. the third question we have is a political question, and we'd like to ask you whether Steamforged are preparing to exit the EU as part of the Brexit, or whether you've decided to secede from the rest of the UK and set up as a sovereign nation.
We definitely spoke about it. We definitely thought we'd set, you know, we'd talk about setting up sort of the Steamforged Isles, so to speak, but we thought it might be a bit too much effort for us, and it might not necessarily go our way PR-wise, so we decided against it, but we definitely talked about it.
Right, right. Have you talked to the Scottish government at all?
Well, Bryce, one of our designers is a guy called Bryce Johnston, actually, who is moving down from Scotland, so he's kind of our representative for all Scottish people. And hopefully you'll get to speak to him maybe in the future yourselves. But we kind of go off whatever he decides to do, really, in terms of, he's our kind of Scotland representative. What do you think, Scotland, Bryce? And basically, he gives us our point.
Right, right. I understand that. I get where you're coming from. I'm reading between the lines. You want to keep it on the down low? That's cool.
Yeah.
We'll just bury that for now. So thanks for answering those questions. That concludes the quick fire round. Maybe just to sort of ease into this conversation, can you sort of give us some background as to how you ended up working with Steamforged?
Yeah, so when you get any kind of job within game design, whether it's board games, video games, a lot of it is going to be about what your history is of playing those things as well, and what general background knowledge you've done in your own time. I was very fortunate that I've known both Matt Hart and Rich Loxham, the original creators of Guild Ball. I've known them for both a very long time, and all of us got together when we were playing War Machine back in the day. And I know that they told me quite early on when they were testing Guild Ball, even in the Kickstarter days, they wanted me on board as one of the play testers. And obviously I got into playing Guild Ball that way. And they just really approved of the kind of ideas that I was coming up with, really. And that's when they recruited me onto their design team.
Was there a swimsuit section in the interview?
Was there a what? Sorry?
A swimsuit section in the interview?
There was not, because I was very fortunate. I didn't even have to do an interview, so that's how lucky I was.
Oh my god! So you basically you lived the gamer's dream of just basically getting a job as a game designer, and without any form of interview, or was there like, did you go to the pub and just get drunk with them, or you'd already done that many times that it didn't matter?
Yeah, but I mean, basically, my entire life with them at that point had been my interview, I think, and they just thought, this is the kind of person we need in our company. So that's kind of it, really.
Dodge the casting couch.
Yeah, I did. I mean, but in all honesty, like, for as a general point, anybody that's interested in kind of game design roles, is most companies, or at least we have the strong philosophy of recruiting from our playtesters. So anybody that's looking for genuinely interested in roles and that kind of thing, is playtesting route is a good way to go, because that's how I got into this role. I just got in quite early on.
And the growth has been phenomenal from what we can see. Like, it must be really exciting just to be part of a company that's growing at the rate that Steamforged is.
Yeah, I mean, it's constantly surprised us. I mean, in the earlier years, when Guild Ball was only originally supposed to be a sort of a gateway game for Steamforged to become a company. It was supposed to, you know, be a nice little game, pardon me, that had a good set of rules, that was going to make a little bit of a name for themselves so that they could go on and do other bigger things. And obviously, plans have changed immediately as soon as Guild Ball became as popular as it did, because that then had to become the main focus of the company. Because it just, and then every now and then we sort of seem to break through another glass ceiling. It's like, wow, we've just hit another level, and it's constantly surprising us as well. We're obviously constantly thankful for it. And then just sometimes it's like we're just trying to keep up with the demand.
Yeah,
and other times,
Just, you know, we've said it before. It's an incredible game, and you know, like, congratulations to all you guys. Just incredible outcome, and we're happy that season 3 is coming up and that you keep throwing out models for us to play with. You know, it's great.
Thank you.
So I was going to have a chat about some of the game design and what that kind of entails. But what I was actually going to start with was, what's your day-to-day? I mean, we loosely chatted about it before, but what's your day-to-day in terms of how much you get to play and, you know, what interactions you get with the new models and that kind of thing?
Well, me personally, I look after all the playtesting groups. So my job is literally to come on, log in every morning, check out. We've got a form of feedback through spreadsheets and things, and I check on what's been submitted overnight, and then look at analyze any data that's come in, see if any changes need to be made to the playtest files at the time. So at the moment, we're obviously testing the things for season 3. Some things have been locked, some things haven't. The things that remain open is what we accept feedback on. Obviously, once a card has gone to print, that is permanently locked, and we can't take any more changes in. And I'm kind of the gateway person for the playtesters, really. Whenever information or whatever changes they want to request has to come through me, so I therefore have to have an up-to-date and very good knowledge of where the game is at, both publicly and in the playtest, so what's going to be appropriate for the game going forwards. Any questions I've got, I'll then, you know, take back and discuss with Matt and Rich, because obviously they're so busy working on a lot of different projects, they can't be constantly doing this. I need to be their informant in terms of when it comes to Guild Ball changes going forwards. So, you know, that's my day-to-day, is mostly to do with looking after the playtesters. Occasionally I get to play games myself, but I spend so much time effectively having arguments with my playtesters, really. most of the time it's discussions, I guess, as well, but I've got to sometimes correct them where they're wrong, or make them try and understand why certain things haven't gone in, or praise them for when good suggestions have been made, and just generally discuss and make sure everyone's on the right track, and why we'd make playtesters understand why we're going a certain way with models, because sometimes that's not immediately clear.
So are they kind of rules clarification things, or it just depends on, you know, it might be a fluff-based kind of decision, or, you know, where you're kind of channeling a certain character to be?
Yeah, it can depend on a number of things. I mean, sometimes my primary focus is always going to be about what's the balance of this model. It's literally in my contract that I need to try and protect the balance of this game as much as I possibly can. And that's actually in writing. So that's obviously going to be my main focus. But that can't be the main focus of every model, because at the end of the day, if every model was going to be exactly 100% balanced on a single point aligned, then the game would probably be much more boring and less fun to play than it is.
You'd be playing checkers.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's got to be some give and take. So we have sort of an area, if you want to say, of accepted balance, and then anything that's outside of that is when we start having problems, and we want to try and bring that inside sort of the area of acceptance, so to speak. But models aren't just changed for that reason. Obviously, they want to be made sure that they're still true to the fluff. And also, sometimes we'll get a sort of blurb for a new model from Matt and Rich. A model hasn't gone that way in playtest. We've made changes to it for balance purposes, and suddenly it's gone away from its core design reasons, and then core design brief, so to speak, and then we'll need to make changes in order to bring it back to its design. Otherwise, things can just end up getting away from themselves if we're not careful.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So, I mean, obviously with season 3 coming up, and like you said before, you're sending off stuff and playtesting you know, both of the new guilds. Do you believe, like, the game health is critical at this point? Like, you're introducing two new guilds, the interactions and how they kind of go, you're kind of force multiplying the way all these interactions work with the existing guilds. Like, how critical is that leading into season 3?
It's highly important. Every time we make any kind of addition to the game, no matter what level it is, it's always going to be important, primarily because we don't use a point system when it comes to adding mods to the game, and we never want to, or we want to avoid as much as possible invalidating any model that's in the game. So whenever we're bringing a new captain in, we're always comparing to what other things are in that same bracket. Whenever we're bringing in new mascots, we need to make sure as much as possible that they're balanced against each other, at least from a selection point of view. I know that sometimes players don't always understand this. Oh, why is coin so much better than truffles or something like that, or whichever comparison you want to make. And we tend to balance more in a particular guild. So as long as coin is at least a selection choice for you when balanced against strongbox, then that's enough for us, because then the mascots can be balance within the guild that they're inside. But sorry, returning to your original question, it's super important for us, particularly with new guilds, because when you're balancing model against the model, that's already not the easiest thing to do when you don't have a point system in the game. But when you're balancing a whole guild against all the other existing guilds, you've got so many things to keep track of. We just have to be very careful when we release new things in the game, and especially because they also need to be very fun. So when we released the Hunters, that was the first kind of chance we got to really see what would happen when we make full-on additions to Guild Ball and make it bigger, and it seems to have been received fairly well as far as we can tell.
So the interaction, obviously the Hunters, we saw Season 2 with introducing Snared and introducing these trap markers, and then obviously the information we've got about the farmers is these harvest tokens. Is that a theme you're going to carry through? Obviously your hands might be tied as to what you can say on this, but it seems that you're introducing a new interaction or a new kind of game mechanic each time. Is that something you look to do with new guilds?
Yes, every time. Well, not necessarily with every single model, but every single time we do a big update to the game, so I guess every season, if you want, then we'll try and add something new to the game, keep the flavour new, really, and try and keep what people are changing all the time different. It's the most healthy games you'll see out there, which I think X-Wing is an excellent example of, in terms of how their meta is constantly shifting, is it keeps people on their toes, keeps the game interesting for people as long as people's choices are constantly changing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how does that sort of play into the idea that, you know, you've maybe got a meta dominated by players like Obulus and Avarice and Greed, with the results off the back of both the US and the German nationals?
So this is a question that's come up quite a lot recently, and obviously I think some people are going to see some of the social media stuff that we've done recently. I think it's called Veterans Opinions that we put out, haven't we, as well? Yeah, so we're just trying to engage more with the community, really, about what they think and feel about it and things. And what I can... kind of the limit on what I can say on those models at the moment is that part of my job, as I said, is looking after the balance of the game. So anytime something becomes a problem, I will spot that and take note of it, because I'm looking for those particular issues. Anytime we decide to make a change, then we will pen that in our calendar. Once that change has been decided, then it's going to happen, and it's a question of we're not going to rush things forwards and push things out in an errata unless we absolutely have to. We've done that once already before for the game, where we released a balance errata, and that's because we felt at the time we really needed to do that, but that's last resort. In terms of we are open to making changes to our models where necessary, and it's just a question of we will make sure that they come out into the public when we feel the public is ready to have them. It's also important for us to make sure that if we release a card update, those cards have got to be sent out worldwide. We've got to make sure we're looking at production deadlines and changing over the cards in the boxes, making sure that as many people get that change at the same time as possible. So obviously, it may sound a small thing to some people to go, oh, why don't you just change this card? Why don't you just do this to a model? It's not quite as simple as that, because our game is sometimes a victim of its own popularity. We have to make sure that when we make a change, that change goes worldwide at the same time it releases. Otherwise, you can start having problems of people playing multiple different versions of a card or a model, and that's just make people unhappy. So I realize I kind of politically dodged that question, but that particular answer is if we decide to make any changes, which we are open to doing, then they get scheduled in for a particular time, and they happen when we feel they're necessary.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I mean, we've seen, so can we say then that you would use potentially, you know, the start of each season as an opportunity to do that, because it's got a lot of card printing and that kind of thing happening at that point? Is that a good opportunity to then kind of refresh certain things you think might need a little bit of tinkering?
Yes, that's absolutely fair to say. I mean, that's kind of one of the main points of the season system, is so that when people come into Guild Ball, they can, one of the earliest things that they learn about us is they can get into their heads the idea that when the seasons take over, that is an opportunity for us to refresh the game when necessary. We've just done that in season 2 by releasing a whole new set of core rules, an updated wording set of core rules, because we found a much better way and sharp way of writing them. Is our opportunity to refresh the game when necessary.
Do you, sorry, I was just thinking about the way you value track models and captains, do you actually plot them? Like, do you get all the feedback from the testing kind of people? Do you actually plot that on a graph, or like have a look at, you know, where the power curves kind of are in terms of which captains are doing better or which models are doing better, and then respond to that?
It depends on which member of our design group you talk to, really, because I mean, we've been quite fortunate recently. We've just recruited DC. Have you played War Machine before? Do you know of the David Carl? David Carl's he was a lead designer for Privateer Press, and we're lucky to have him with us now. So he's quite number orientated when he comes to wanting to make changes to models, and he likes to put things into graphs, as you're saying, assign things to sort of power level numbers, and really sort of he works in hidden points values if you don't have one. That's great for the way he works things. I tend to go more off the feel of a model and whether when I put myself in the situation of I'm playing this team, are all of these players valid choices? Is this a difficult choice for me? I got to do quite a lot of hands-on work with the Hunters, and I felt that, at least from my perspective, I was able to achieve a state where I look at the Hunters team and it's very difficult to, at least in the beginning it was before people sort of got into the swing of it, it's very difficult to look at that team and go, I can identify my six players immediately. And that's what the state I'm trying to get to with every team from a sort of feel perspective. What tactically do I want to put in this team? Is it a difficult choice? If everything is a difficult choice, then I've achieved my mission.
So we can, I can blame you for making it so difficult to learn Hunters when they...
absolutely, because not necessarily so difficult to learn them, but in terms of making player selection difficult, that's absolutely something I've tried to put into teams.
Absolutely noticed that as well. It's kind of like, you know, there's nobody here that I want to drop. All of these players are perfectly valid and can do, you know, equally useful things. You did a good job.
So... thank you very much. So when I'm making edits to models, or when we're balancing particular, anything really in the game, is I always compare it to what else is in the same bracket as it, and often that's whatever the guild has particular access to. So I'm not going to compare Shank to Vitriol, for instance, because you'll never need to. They're never going to play in the same team. But you would compare Shank to the Union options that are in the Butchers, for instance. And you're suddenly going to go, what is my choice for this team going to look like, and what are fair choices against each other? And if they're not, why, and what changes should we make?
Mm. So I've noticed you talk really fast. Is that caffeine or methamphetamines?
I purposefully try and avoid caffeine. Have you ever seen the film Hoodwinked, or I think it's Hoodwinked, where they have a squirrel in the film and they actually give it coffee? I'm not sure the world could survive if I ever actually had real caffeine. So
right, so it's
yes, I do apologise about that. It's no. So I apologise for my fast speaking. I'll try and bring it down, but it's just
no, man. I love it.
We'll slow it down like twice as long an episode, so it's fine.
I can hear your brain whirring. It's fantastic. It's great.
Actually, so speaking on the development of teams and how involved you got with the Hunters, do you have a skin? I mean, I've obviously listened to other podcasts and you've talked about, you know, there's a kind of a basic stat line of players, but do you have certain parameters that you won't step outside, like a power level for a certain stat, i.e. influence, speed, kick stat, that you won't step outside? Or is it all fair game and then you try to dial it back when you do the testing?
I've got 2 points for that. One is, as a philosophy for when we playtest, we purposefully... It's very exciting being a playtester for Steamforge games because you get to see the most ridiculously broken models at playtest, because we purposefully playtest overpowered to then dial it down. Because our philosophy for that is it's much easier to spot something that's overpowered than it is to spot something that's underpowered and then bring it up. So when it also means that our designers can have a lot more freedom when they go, I want to do this really cool thing. It's fine. Go and do the really cool thing. And when it is busted, we'll find a way to bring it down. And it also gives you, you know, so much more space to work with when you can just have the freedom to literally write whatever you want the model to do. The second point of that is going to be, yes, so we do have sort of loose guidelines. So, for example, the 3-6 kickstart tends to be our sort of your average model kickstart. But when you get to 8, that's kind of reserved. Used to be just reserved for strikers, but generally the sort of 8 and above kick ranges are for the sort of specialist kicking models, as a loose term, but not always the case. It's the same for captains, as most of the time we go for a 4-6 influence stat on a captain. We can break that, but generally it's for a particular reason. So for instance, on Ox, he's gone to a 4-5 because he's capable of so much damage per swing, then it would probably be too much for him to have the capacity to have 6 influence on him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Have you, so you haven't ever thought of like an attacking defender, you know, style that can shoot, you know, like a 14-inch range, but like one dice only?
Yeah, there are certain things we won't go beyond because we don't think they're necessarily healthy for the game. So one of the things we have to be careful of generally is ranges, because as soon as you have ranges that go beyond a certain point, which is probably going to go, I think the longest kick range we have in the game is 12 or 13 at the moment, which is Angel under like Corsair's legendary play, I think. Yep. Correct me if I'm wrong.
She can get 12, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's many ways of going past 12 or 13. I think 13 is about as far as you can get. I think that's Brewers are capable of that maybe as well. But we don't go beyond those ranges because then you start getting less player interactivity because people can shoot from literally in their own halfway lines and stuff. And then when you start getting less player interaction with each other, that's when the game becomes less fun. And obviously you want player interaction because we're playing a game. It needs to be fun. So that's why certain ranges are not longer than they are. Max cap, because then you literally start getting a less fun game if it's because you're making the game easier to win. So it's therefore less challenging, therefore less fun to play.
So what was the thinking? Yeah, what was the thinking around Puppet Master? You know, cost four, get one back. What was the thinking around getting that one influence back for that particular play?
Yeah, I will entirely take the brunt of the fault for that one because that was my suggestion. So. We're all human. We don't always make the perfect decisions. We learn from the mistakes that we've made. And there was a point in the original season one playtest where Puppet Master was just not being used. And what we did was we made a couple of changes to Obulus and changed Puppet Master at the same time. And the lesson we learned from that later on, obviously, is that when you're making changes to models, generally, the closer to release you get, the smaller the tweaks you want to make. So what a lot of our playtesters see is I'm doing this waving movement with my hand, completely forgetting that you can't see anything that I'm doing. But in the early days of when a model's come to playtest, they'll sometimes get a lot of swinging changes, and then the closer to release date that we get, the smaller and smaller tweaks that we made to that model, because that's just what's healthier for the model. And that was just a question of we made a too big change to Obelisk towards the end of Season 1 playtest. However, I will add a caveat into the fact that the Season 1 playtest for the entire core rules and all of the models therein was about 3 months. Was quite short. So whilst Kickstarter is an excellent tool for getting games out there, it does provide pressures sometimes if your company isn't ready for it. And obviously Steamforged Games had just been born at that point, so we were all learning on the job, so to speak.
Well, I think the flip side is that you pushed out a game of incredible quality with 3 months playtesting. I mean, that's the real achievement.
Yeah, we think so. We like to think so, yeah. And it's like kind of you to say so, thank you. But yeah, what we did in that space of time wasn't bad, so to speak.
Well, yeah. I mean, history has vindicated you, I think you can safely say. What did JCAR originally look like in playtesting?
So JCAR actually went through a heck of a lot of changes because he was sort of a trapper model that was a lot more similar to Chaska. And he was going to be putting down multiple traps in a turn, and they were doing different things. And that was kind of originally his thing. He was going to be a sort of melee trapper, and it just wasn't working very well. He also actually had a rule on him, I think it was called Assassin's Blood, where he had casket time as a trait. So he wasn't gaining the extra VPs for taking you out, but any model that he took out was staying off the table for skipping a turn. And whilst that was incredibly powerful and useful for the guild, people playing against it were like, anytime this guy kills someone, I'm not getting to play with a model. And you want to be very careful when you tell someone you can't play with this model.
Yeah, that sounds, sounds broken as fuck. That's amazing.
It was indeed, yeah. So the version of JCAR that we've got actually was one of the last of the hunters to be locked in because we weren't just happy with his direction. So we had a bit of a change of direction for him. We kept a little bit of the trapping theme around him, which is why he's got his pitfall marker. But the direction of the model changed to what do the hunters need? And at the time, because we started to see all the rest of the hunters settling into their roles, that we knew they needed more of a straight-up damage dealer. So that's what he became for the team.
Sorry, Cam, I cut you off before. Did you want to jump in?
No, all good. I was actually just going to ask a more casual question about in terms of the internal kind of playing. I know I've heard Jamie, yourself, or I think possibly Matt talk about how you've got an internal, or obviously the playtesting, and you see that there's about a two-month lag between what you guys kind of work out and trends and then how that kind of rolls out in the international meta. But do you actually have just like a Friday kind of charity shield where you guys all just get together and play for, you know, bragging rights?
It's the one thing we wish we could do more. We all get to play. We all try and play whenever we possibly can. I mean, Matt Hart actually lives in a different city. He lives in most of Steamforge is based in Manchester, and he actually lives down in London. So we'll get games about with him whenever he comes up, whenever we can get him at meetings. But we don't get to play as many games as we used to be able to. We're still getting games whenever we possibly can. And I've had a really bad losing streak recently. I seem to be losing to all of the other designers, and I'm just like this is what it's supposed to be. I need to stop being so nice. So. Yeah, it's really bad. I mean, the guy sat next to me, who's being very quiet, is somebody that I think you know, David. You played him on Vassal. Alex Hall is one of our recently acquired designers.
Yeah, Alex. Yeah, is so I believe. Yep.
He keeps kicking my head in every time we play the game. I'm like, you're supposed to be working on Dark Souls. You're not supposed to be any good at Guild Ball. This isn't fair. But yeah, no. So all the players in the design team are pretty good at playing Guild Ball, with the exception of perhaps Rich. That's because Rich doesn't get to play at all. When we went to an event called Vengeance earlier in the year, the guy running the event had to beat the designer. Beat the Maker award. Every time that Rich lost a game, he was going to give away a limited edition mist. In 7 games, he gave away 5 of them. Yeah.
What is? I'm surprised he didn't just set up a dunk tank. Have people ditch that?
Yeah.
Might have been more merciful.
It might have been easier for him. Yeah.
Poor bastard. So what guilds have you been playing that you've been getting so badly beaten with?
I actually really love playing with the Hunters. I mean, my favourite guild used to be the Morticians, but I kind of got a bit of a look in a difficult task when we got the contract for Dark Souls through, and that meant that Matt and Rich had to literally drop things with Guild Ball and run towards the end of Season 2. Most of the work was already done for finishing the models off, but they literally had to work for, I think it was for 4 weeks solidly, night and day. We dearly didn't hear from them because they needed to get this pitch ready for Dark Souls. So they literally went, Jamie, you need to go and finish off Season 2, which I was well capable of doing, and I think Season 2 is generally going quite well in terms of the model balance. Just to throw that in there, but so I got to finish off the Hunters really, and I kind of got to carve out their playstyle in the way that I saw fit. So I have feel quite like I've got a strong attachment to the Hunters. So I played a large amount of games with them in that short space of time to make sure that they got finished properly, and I ended up just really growing to love the playstyle. So they're the team that I play most often now. Is just really love playing with the Hunters.
They're also pretty easy on the eyes. They're very nice models. So
gorgeous.
What sort of playstyle do you... I mean, you talk about their playstyle. We've talked with Trent Dennison a bit about Hunters, and he describes them as a hit-and-run style faction. Is that how you roll them out, or do you have a particular insight, having designed them and, you know, brought them into being?
Yeah, that's I think that's how they first come across to players. Because I also have quite a competitive mindset, and I've played... I got to play in Vengeance with the Hunters, where I won 4 games and lost 3. And I've played in another small event with them as well, just when I got the chance to on a Saturday. I think I went 3-2 in that one. 3 wins and 2 losses. So what I'm finding with them when I play from competitive standpoint is that you need to go on the offensive with them and not take your foot off the gas, so to speak. Because whilst Hunters play a controlling style game, sort of melee control, or at least I do with them, as soon as you lose control of the game, they really struggle to get it back. That's because they don't really have enough players that are good at just throwing out pure damage. Like, it's great you've got Jaykar, and if you choose to take him, it's great you've got Cena, but as soon as those models get sort of singled out and taken out, then you struggle for raw damage, which you need to be able to win an attritional battle. So I also think I tend to score more goals with the Hunters than most people. I think I scored 7 goals over the course of the 7 games at Vengeance, and 4 of those were with Ygritte, so... More, you know, first point to anybody not playing Ygritte, play Ygritte some more. She just tends to hang around the centre, and as soon as somebody scored a goal against me, she'll fire one back in straight up the other end. And if she hasn't got the chance to do that, then the 2 influence that's on her is going to be used for a flurry on somebody. I'm going to stop skirting around your questions. To answer it more directly, I play quite aggressively with them. So my first turn, for instance, is putting 3 influence onto Hearn. I'll actually prefer to kick off with the Hunters because I want to get Hearn further up the table. So I'll kick off with Hearn. He has 3 influence on him. Theron's going to have 5 or 6, literally just so he can get a shot off on somebody, with pinned, so that he can Sunstrike himself, get an MP, which he'll use to bless Hearn. So Hearn is now like fully buffed up for the first turn. You put that forest down in front of Hearn, and you can literally jump him into the player's deployment zone. So you can throw him that far that you're going to have a really good crack at stealing the initiative for turn 2. And if you can manage to do that with the Hunters, you've got most of your team up the field, you've stolen the initiative for turn 2 when you kick the ball, and then suddenly you've got your opponent on the back foot, and you can just start taking players out left, right, and centre, and anybody you can snare up and pinned up and stuff. And yeah, so that's the way I like to play with them. I just kind of go for the throat. You also don't have enough damage to take out a whole team at once. So you've got to pick a player or two that you can take out for a turn, and then the rest of your team is just trying to survive or delay the rest of the players. So it's that kind of taking out this one or two dudes, just stop everyone else from punching me in the face because I have a pretty face, I wish. And that's kind of how the game goes. But as soon as you lose control of that situation, it all rolls against you and everyone gets killed.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting. That's really interesting. I've played a few games where you can definitely feel that shift in momentum, where you just feel the game swing back against you. But I like to use J-Car last activation, first turn, first activation, second turn, and hopefully get those 6 points, take out, and then score a goal with him. And that seems to roll the game out.
Definitely well capable of doing that.
Yeah. He's an amazing striker for a guy with a 2-6 kickstat.
Yeah, because he's just so fast. I mean, I love the minigame, though, of just seeing how ridiculous you can make his activation. So I think when I was, again, playing at Vengeance, I think the most silly one I got over the course of the weekend was a knocked-down Brick who was singled out, snared, loads of people around him, and when J-Car came in, he was literally rolling 12 dice per swing, and Brick just evaporated in a cloud of MP and blood.
Love it.
And then I think, obviously, won me the initiative, and then he finished the game off with a goal. And he just happens to have the ball as well, because just J-Car things.
Yes. No, he's. I think he's my favourite player in all of Guild Ball. I love that guy.
He's really good fun to play with.
Yeah. I'll stop monopolising the conversation and talking about Hunters, because I have a habit of doing that.
No, we could talk about Hunters all day. I got no problem with that. I was actually going to ask, in terms of what you both were saying about having the momentum in a Hunters game, or putting the pressure on, is it literally just having the most momentum and basically getting that first activation each turn? Because that's how it looks from an outside point of view looking in.
It's very important for the Hunters to do that, because as I was trying to sum up before, it's about keeping your foot on the gas and keeping your foot on the throat of the opponent. You need to keep them reacting to your moves, because as soon, and that's the Hunter, that's the Hunter's form of control. It's not the same as the Morticians, where they can kind of just do whatever they want during the turn and they'll still have control over the game, or that's what they're trying to do. The Hunters really need to be very aggressive in their control of the game, and literally making the opponent react to their moves. If they're not doing that, then they're fine. It's very difficult for the Hunters to score points if they're the reactive player, because they find it very difficult to take a player down one-to-one, unless you're J-Car. They'll often take two or three players to take out an enemy player. And if you're not being the aggressor and going straight for that straight away, or you're reacting to the opponent, they've got more chances to heal the player, more chances to move them away, and it's just not as easy for them to score victory points. That's kind of what it is with the Hunters, really. You find quite early on that they've got some really cool controlling tools, but unless you're being that aggressive player, it's actually quite difficult to get points out of the opponent.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We had a conversation with Jordan Murphy, the Canadian champ, I think, in the last cast, and he... Jordan Knack in the one before. He basically spoke about the resource that is the ball and the disparity in the kickoff. And I was just thinking about, obviously, how the Hunters roll out, threat extension, that kind of thing, and how important the ball is. Is that something you guys have looked at in terms of, you know, that one-off dice roll, who goes first or who kicks and receives? Have you looked at that and how that affects the health of the game or the way a game rolls out?
Yeah, we try and look at all aspects of the game where possible, and that is one of the things that we're focused on, and it is possible that there could be a possible change there in the future, but I will not give the details of what that might be at this time.
No, that's fair enough.
I mean, you know, it's encouraging to hear that you're on the ball, so to speak.
I see what you did there. Yeah. I see what you did there.
if we're sort of talking about dangling carrots. Do you have anything that you can say about the next Hunter's captain, maybe?
Well, one of the big questions for the Hunters that people have given us is when you get new factions for any game, people want to know whether that faction will be caught up. And yes, I can confirm the Hunters will be caught up in this next season, so they will be getting a similar kind of treatment to what the other teams got in season two. So that tells you roughly what kind of releases they're going to get. Other than that, I can't really give many details on what those releases will be like. So, yes, you can imagine that they will be getting a captain. We know that every team needs a second captain, so the Hunters will be getting that. And they will also be getting a second mascot. And then, as I say, other releases will mirror what basically happened in Season 2. They will be caught up. But unfortunately, I can't give more than that at this time.
That is brilliant. I'm very excited for that. Can't wait. You know,
Well tonight.
I feel like Christmas just came. I could go further with that metaphor, but I'm just going to leave it there.
No. So, having said that about obviously the catching up, then that's an indication that the other guilds obviously won't plateau. But you know, there's a point at which you don't want to like have that model's bloat and you know the extension of 10 different captains in each guild. So they'll be basically slowing down and only getting a few additions.
That's correct. Yeah, we know there's a point where it's very important to Matt as well as sort of the instigator of the system of guilds is or having the guilds as a system, so to speak, is that we know there's a point at which you can't go grow guilds beyond. When Matt talks about his philosophy for guild design, he talks about the sort of nucleus that is the single idea of a guild. So, for example, take the Butchers, is the one he likes to talk about, is the fact the Butchers are these glass cannons that do probably the most amount of damage per swing, generally. But there are other things that they're not going to be quite as good at as other guilds. As soon as you go to a certain point in releases, then you start getting guild homogenization, where every guild has access to every tool, and we definitely don't want to have that happen. So we will be slowing the releases down, but you've noticed that from Season 2 we released one extra guild, Season 3 we released two extra guilds. That kind of gives you an indication of what kind of trends are going towards in the future.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that.
Doesn't mean we're going to stop releasing models for those guilds, but just means, yeah, they're not going to be quite as much as they got in Season 2 generally going forwards. As another point as well, you notice that in Season 2 we kind of gave everyone a uniform upgrade. Everyone got a captain, you know, with the exception of like Compound. Everyone got a captain, everyone got a mascot, everyone got an additional player, and everyone got a veteran. And sometimes that was mixed up a little bit, as it was in the case of the Union. It's not going to be quite as uniform going forward. So some teams might get a captain, some teams might get a veteran returning as another player, some teams might just get an additional player completely. So it's going to be less uniform for the extra guilds original guilds as it goes forwards.
So can we look forward to a veteran mascot, like Veteran Salt, gets back on the table?
There is a potential for that.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant, you've just made a lot of people happy. Potentially.
Yeah. All I say is there is a potential.
I'd really like that release philosophy, because you know I found it frustrating coming from War Machine and Hordes, where you know obviously they've been going for a long time, but there was such model bloat, and I don't know your opinion about this, but my feeling is that Mark III was an opportunity to maybe rejig stuff that hadn't been selling quite as well, and you know. Get rid of some of that back inventory that had probably built up over time, without actually doing anything meaningful in terms of designing models that are useful and interesting to play with. You know, it's just spam at that point.
You've got to understand. I've got to answer that question quite professionally, and I think that what
if you like,
what
we can
I'll say what Private Press were trying to achieve was very noble with their game. The execution of it may not have been exactly what I would have chosen to do, but I can see what they were trying to do with it. So I'll just say that about it.
Bring on the sovereign nation of Steamforged. You can be their chief diplomat.
Yeah, brilliant.
It's pretty fancy.
But I also don't want to be the instigator of a legal battle.
I understand. You're doing a fantastic job. I'm sure there'll be no injunctions coming your way.
I would hope so.
So what have you got, Cam? Like, do you have anything else you needed to ask or you wanted to ask?
I guess, you know, you've already answered my question about if Matt and Rich had an arm wrestle of Gilbor, who'd win. Is Matt actually still playing the attrition?
He kind of flips between his attrition, because that's the only kind of fisherman that he plays, and his butchers. He flips between those two. It depends on kind of what mood he's in at the time. But, yeah, he still plays them.
Isn't that slightly, maybe not counterintuitive, but it's slightly opposing to the fisherman playstyle?
I think he likes the irony in that. I think he likes dangling it in front of Rich, that he's like, this isn't what your guild was supposed to do, but look what I've made him do, ha ha, in a very sort of playground sort of way. And when you get to know Matt a bit more, you know he definitely has that big childish side about him, which is kind of cool, really.
Basically, the fishermen are kind of like Rich's child, and are the butchers like Matt's, or is that kind of how it plays out?
Yeah, so that was sort of the original two guilds they came up with, so they feel a lot of, I don't think ownership is the right word, but yes. Fishermen are kind of symbolistically Rich's guild, and the Butcher's the same for Matt. So yeah, they feel like they have a lot of ownership over those guilds.
Does your preference for control guilds, does that afford us some sort of insight into your personality?
I am absolutely a control freak, yes. Right. Absolutely, 100%. Sorry.
And how has that manifested historically? You don't have to answer that question.
Probably better off asking my wife, and I'm not going to tell you what her name is.
Brilliant.
That's great.
We'll move on from the jammy personal questions. I was just going to say, does anyone actually, of the Steamforge crew, is anyone coming to the Australian Nationals?
So, I don't know if we will be doing. I'm free for the weekend, so I literally went to Matt, like, Matt, can I go? And I think he's still thinking about it. We've got a lot of trips going on at the moment, and we've got a lot of staff all over the place, and we need somebody to back here to hold the fort whilst information is coming in from the playtesters. So, I'm trying to get there. I don't know if I'll be there, quite honestly.
Tell Matt that Trent Dennison's taking everybody to Dreamworld on the Monday. So if you haven't been to Dreamworld, it's kind of like a shit Disneyland. Full of people from Queensland and, you know, tourists and whatever. So I don't know, man. Maybe it's the icing on the cake. It's a cherry on top that you need to get down here.
I'll definitely mention it, see if it helps.
Yeah, it's not going to help.
Probably not, but I'll mention it.
No, I'll just probably finish up by saying thanks for coming on, Jamie. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. It's been good. I mean, are you guys actually both playing the Australian Nationals?
Yeah, we live in Adelaide, which is in South Australia, so we'll hop a flight up and we'll play the tournament and see how we go.
I have an Adelaide, small fact, I have an Adelaide Crows shirt in my wardrobe at home because I lived in Australia for 7 months when I was 10.
Good on you, mate. Good team choice.
yeah, you could have alienated part of our supporter base here, but no, that's fine.
they're about to play a finals game this weekend.
Saturday night. Yep.
So it's the end of AFL season here. So very exciting. They've had a pretty good run this year.
Yeah.
AFL, what a game. Yeah. No, thanks for coming on, Jamie. We really, really appreciate the time.
Well, thanks very much. It's been fun.
So we have Tim Wisniewski on the line, all the way from Germany, winner of the German Nationals Guild Ball Tournament 2016. Tim, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
Yes, it's been quite the ordeal trying to line up the time zones, but we made it work. There was a DeLorean involved. Yeah, yeah. So what we normally do with this whole thing is we ask our guest three questions. And we're just going to fire them at you, Tim. First question is, what are you wearing?
Ooh, a shirt and joggers.
No pants?
No pants.
Hey.
It's a religious thing.
That's good, man. We can work with that. You know, bit of tackle on the loose, that's all fine.
Yeah.
Second question, and this is mainly because... I don't know if you know Quinn Duggan, but he's a UK Guild Ball player, and the first time I ever played him on Vassal, he said to me, do you pronounce it Jaykar or Yaykar? So, Tim, do you pronounce it Jaykar or Yaykar?
I pronounce it Jaysa.
Ooh. Well, man.
That's the third one.
Why do you pronounce it that way?
I don't know. I thought it... should be pronounced this way, to be honest. I don't know. I was told it's from the German word Jäger. It means hunter. Mm. But Jaysa was my shot. I don't know.
Man, okay. Well, that's all I'm going to call it from now on, you know.
Yeah, we're going with Jaysa.
It's nice. Sounds fast. So the third question is a bit of a political question.
Okay.
And we want to know whether you're worried about the political fallout from the Brexit and whether that will affect diplomatic relations for you at Worlds.
No, for me in person not, but I think it was a pretty bad call, to be honest, but that's my opinion.
Mm. Would you like to say anything? We know Nigel Farage listens to this podcast. Would you like to say anything to him personally? I mean, this is your platform.
You fucked up. A pretty bad way, I think. But
that's beautiful, man. I like the simplicity of it.
it's pretty much all summed up.
He's a fucking lizard man from the center of the earth. All right, so we want to chat to you about the German nationals and you know how you went throughout that tournament, games that you played, and like, I don't know, man, did you just want to jump into your games and maybe give us a bit of a recap?
I think the German nationals are a pretty small one because the whole tournament scene over here is quite box fresh and. I consider myself as a big fish in a small pond or something like this. Because it's pretty new right over here. It's like we got 15 tournaments or something like this. And we are just getting into it. And I started at the Spiel in Essen with playing Guild Ball. I bought a mortician's team because someone who was there told me that this could be my kind of team because I like it more toolbox-ish and playing creative. Mm-hmm. And I think he got me there. It's a pretty nice team. Mm. I really like to play it. My lineup was Obelus, Scalpel, Dirge, Gust, Fierce and Greed, Rage, and Bonesaw, I guess. Yeah, Bonesaw. Typical Obelisk plus Galpath was. I missed.
Yeah.
I see what you did there.
I hate this guy.
Yeah. Another player who has taken Avarice and Greed, he seems to be everywhere. Like those two.
It's some kind of counterpick for me because if I'm playing Masons or something like this, with this early aggression on turn one with the last two activations or something like this, if I'm not getting this bonus activation from Avarice and Greed, I'm gonna be fucked for sure.
Yeah.
Like double goal from Flint turn one or just a shizzle or what he's called?
Mallet
missile.
Yeah, the old mallet missile, or chisel missile.
That'd be pretty hard to beat.
Yeah. Fuck Masons.
if they pick Avarice and Greed, I usually pick Avarice and Greed too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it seems like you almost have to. You know, if one player is playing a seven activation game, you need to have seven activations yourself.
We've come to that conclusion, haven't we, in the games that we play. Like, you just, they have to be on your sideboard. Absolutely.
I guess maybe Fish and Engineers could do without them, because they can play pretty aggressively on the ball to score goals. But just to slip a turn two win away or something like this. But I guess all the other teams like Butchers, Morticians, Brewers, all these kind of grindy teams really need them, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're dead right, mate. So I was really interested to hear that German players are pretty loose in how they approach their tournament games, and that it was basically a swim through for you.
Yeah, we usually drink a lot at tournaments. But for me, playing is should be fun. So I have to enjoy my time over there. And if it's getting me angry or something like this, I would stop playing. So I have to approach it in a very loose form of competitive play, I guess.
Nice. I like this, man. This is like Drunken Master style Kung Fu.
Yeah, kind of this, yeah.
Yeah, man, I love it.
But I'm like autopiloting my mortician lists right now. Like, after playing like 250 or 300 games with the same setup. Whoa. I think I can do it while being totally wasted right now.
Fuck yeah.
All right. So does it worry you at all that that after like listening to interviews like this, Steamforged might put in some kind of drug testing regime?
I think they would cut their own flesh doing so.
Yeah. Yeah. Valid point. For me, it speaks volumes of your ability, you know, to maintain that muscle memory. So if you've played, you know, 300 odd games, which is heaps, to then, you know, with the same team, then you've obviously, like you said, you've got that muscle memory kind of down that you can just roll it out in whatever state. I love that.
I think you got some usual kind of game every game. So you have to stall all the activations first turn to get your really big activations last. And if you're getting into it and doing it all and over again, it's pretty much only muscle memory.
Mm-hmm. So how do you see? I mean, given your experience playing that many games, how do you see each game roll out? Like, what sort of consistent pattern do you see playing out with these games? You know, what are the obvious activations? What are the things that you see over and over again?
It's some usual Obelus first turn plays, like fishing one player right into my team and gaining momentum over through rage or gust or something like this, or just go for the ball with mist or something like this are pretty usual plays.
And I mean, how often are you playing to get that many games under your belt? Like, you say you haven't been playing that long, or the scene's pretty fresh. You know, you're playing like multiple games a week.
Yeah, for sure. I used to be a student at university like half a year ago, and I had plenty of time, so I get like 30 games a week.
Fuck.
Something like
that. Jesus, mate, that's insane.
Yeah, 20 to 30 games, I guess.
Wow. What, you sort of have a club that you play at locally, or like
We got a club room, and all of us got the key for it, so we can meet there like any time. It's not like you're playing in your local gaming store or something like this.
Yep.
But we could go there at 7 a.m. or 12 p.m. no problem.
Awesome.
Yeah, it is for sure.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. So, what sort of teams do you see represented sort of locally? You know, what are people playing? You play morticians. What are people who you're playing with play?
I play engineers, alchemists, butchers, and hunters as well. Mm-hmm. And all of our players got a minimum of two or three teams, I guess. Right. So we're pretty widespread.
Right. And how many people are in the sort of local meta?
We're pretty smallish, I guess, like six or eight, which are, I guess, five or six, which are pretty active, and some just playing like every 3 weeks or something like this.
And how many people played at the German Nationals? Did you say that already, or?
No. I guess there were 24.
Okay, right. So
pretty Polish.
Yeah. No, I think that's pretty much consistent with what we've heard elsewhere. I mean, okay. Obviously the US one was a bit bigger, but the Canadian one sounds like it was a similar size.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got, I think I was speaking to a guy last night, and he's saying the Australian one's got about 20 odd registered as well. So it seems pretty consistent numbers.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought we were pretty small.
No. You don't have to justify your size. Your size is perfect, you know. Yeah. How did the standings look? Like, morticians first? Like, who came second, third, fourth? Like, what guilds?
Philippe Butchers second, Fisherman third, and another Mortician on the fourth plate, I think.
Yeah. Mortz, man. Broken. Overpowered.
Yeah.
And were there any standout moments from the games that you played? Anything that sort of stuck in your mind, you know, through that haze of alcohol?
Yeah, for sure. There was a first activation goal, I guess, on my side while I was the kicking team, the scalper.
Wow! And how did it play out?
I kicked with her, like on the side, moved her up like her 7-inch movement. The fisherman recovered the ball. Passed it right back to his team, like in the middle of his deployment zone. And I went in, dropped my legendary, tackled, dodged, and got the goal.
Wow, that's awesome. Good, yeah.
It's pretty good because I could get slingshot goals with Bonesaw or Mist, like right away if they score.
That's amazing. Like, was your opponent, you know, demoralized? Were they a bit sad?
I guess a bit. Yeah. Because he tried his shark goal afterwards, but there were three miniatures in front of the goal, so he was like minus two dice and plus one target number because he didn't get any line of sight, mm-hmm. and he missed the goal with shark. So I was 4-0 in front at the end of turn one against Fish, who received. Man, it was pretty good.
He had the ball. Yeah,
I had the ball. Missed at the ball. Like 15 inches away from any other miniature on the field.
That's gross.
It was pretty good.
You're a terrible human being, Tim.
That's for sure.
So it's with your the drunken haze that is the German game state. Can you run us through what teams you played against in each round and give us, you know, a rough idea of what the score rolled out as?
Yeah, my first game was against Brewers with Pepper. My opponent greeted me and told me that he never played Morticians before.
Oh dear.
So it was I felt a bit sorry for him, to be honest, because I think playing Morticians the first time is a terrible experience.
Yeah.
It went out 12-0 in my favor, so...
If you don't know what's coming, though, I mean, like, I actively, and Dave humors me and plays the matchup, but I actively ask him to play Obulus into me just so I can get the practice. It's never pretty, even when you know what's going on, but if you don't know what's coming, it can be sad times.
Sure. The second one was against Brew as well. He dropped Estus, and he received as well. I really get it. He went forward with Estus, dropping some AoEs in my team, and I proc'd the Gluttonous Mass with Mist, mm-hmm. and Puppet Mastered him in and killed Estus turn one. So after that, it was pretty steamrolly.
That's brutal, man.
I guess. That was like 12-2, I guess.
Jesus.
Something like this.
All right. So yeah. What happened next? It took, what, six rounds? Did you go six rounds or?
Five.
Five rounds.
Five.
All right. Yeah. So you've basically spent two rounds, you know, stomping kittens.
Yeah, I'm getting drunk.
And getting drunk. Drunkenly punching kittens. What happened round three?
That was the game against the fisherman.
Oh, okay.
With Scalper doing his stuff. Scalper was doing the first goal. After that, I got a second one with Mist, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah, and then he started to score like two goals, and I got two takeouts. Yeah, should be so. It was okay, but I think if I'm trying to to score first and keeping on the pressure, it's a pretty good matchup for me.
Yes.
I really struggled this matchup with Obolus because they are too fast to slow down and to control.
Yeah.
So I went for Scarpa. I'm pretty happy with it. It worked out pretty well.
Do you like Scalpel?
I do. I do for sure. Particularly in this kind of matchup, if the other team is fast and scoring, like Alchemist can be, or some engineer lineups, or fisherman, I really like her because you're not forced to play this kind of controllish game like you are with Obolus. At least I am. I'm used to play it pretty slow and controllish. Mm-hmm. With Scalpa, you get these 4 or 6 points.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm making the word.
The 4 or 6 point activations.
Yeah, with Scalpa getting a mascot and a goal or something like this.
Yeah.
You get this swing to your favor in this particular matchups, so you can do your slingshot goals after that and are pretty much ahead all the game long.
I've sort of played her once against Campbell, and he crushed me, and it made me sad. So I haven't played her since. But you know, I like what you're saying.
Got to get used to her. She got some kind of puppet master in her toolbox as well with the push dodge result on 3 hits, I guess, mm-hmm. which is momentum and does 1 damage as well. So you can send her in and push dodge like 5 or 6 inch to your own deployment zone or your own rage or gust or I don't know what you're using, like Fenty or something like that.
I use Midas similar to that, or I can. I mean, Midas has got the toolbox. Yeah, absolutely. So if you've got a push dodge early, that's momentous. It's a good way of just, run in, generate momentum, drag it back to your deployment, and then punch him in the face. I love it.
You can use it defensively and offensively. So I guess this whole toolboxy kind of playbook is pretty, pretty nice, for sure.
I will have to spend more time playing her, Tim.
Yeah, you have to, definitely. Mm. I really like her.
So, game round 4. How did that go for you?
This was the game against the Butcher team playing Filet.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was a really, really close game. One of the best games I have had on any tournament till now. I was damned to kick again, I guess. And played it very defensively to the first turn, like spreading out 3 inches to the next model on my side, and trying to stand where Filet couldn't get more than 1 model at any time. Mm-hmm. I could get the momentum and the initiative, so I took out Filet turn 2, I guess, like the first or second activation. Mm-hmm. Picked up the opponent's rage as well and tried to steamroll him like in a big brawly fight in the middle without Filet and rage. But I lost the initiative roll with +3 in turn 3, I guess.
Ugh.
Lost me my Obolus. Filet came from the sides and took him out with 8 influence on him. That was a pretty big swing in this game.
That is brutal.
It is.
Yeah.
Pretty unlucky, but it was okay. So I placed him not in the best spot and had to pay for it. So we went like 10-6 in front, and after that, I really only had Mist and Obolus left on the field. All the other miniatures were like standing on the edge of the board on my deployment zone, just keeping their distance to the enemy Butcher team.
So, and how did you close the game out? How did you get the win in the end?
Yeah, there were a gutter like left on 4 or 5 hit points. Obolus went in, Puppet Master himself for movement, ran beside the forest, to shut down the line of sight to like four players or something like this. And then there was missed in his backfield, running for the ball, and only Princes was able to reach him, I guess. Mm-hmm. He couldn't drop Obolus in this turn because he couldn't get there, and I shot my goal, I guess. I shot the goal like a three dice goal shot, and if I had missed it, I would definitely have lost the game for sure. It was like my last chance in this particular game state.
Nice. Sounds like a cracker of a game. Sounds great.
Was a blast.
Final game. What team did you play against?
Brewer against.
Man.
So it was a Tepper matchup, and I dropped Obolus as I did the other two times before. Mm-hmm. And my opponent didn't really go for a mist. I was receiving the ball, did my last activation turn one goal, and got a first activation turn two goal was missed as well. And then I closed the game with a puppet master pass to Obolus, pushing him forwards, running forwards, and I did my third goal in, I guess, end of turn two or start of turn three.
Jesus.
Wow. Yeah. It
was pretty rushy, for sure.
Yeah. So, based on what you've sort of said throughout your games, you seem to have a focus on a more football style of play rather than just, you know, grinding people into the middle and punching them to death. Do you prefer that football style of game over the melee style?
I really like the option to have these 4-point activations. Like, missed can score like from any point of the on the table. He can shoot a goal for sure, like 24 inches or something, no, 22 inches without Puppet Master, I guess, something like this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I really like these swings. So this grindy style could get a problem if something like the situation in the butcher play appears, in the butcher game appears, like I lose one favorable initiative role and pretty much lost the game from right there. And that problem was with this grindy kind of play, I guess. I really like this fast scoring option, so missed is like in every of my teams.
So how often did you play Avarice and Greed throughout the course of the tournament?
Only once. It was against the Fisherman with Skalpel. I dropped Avarice and Greed, and I knew he had Avarice and Greed as well. But if he would have picked him, there would be one striker less on the field. So I would have slowed his football game a bit. And if he didn't pick him, I got a bonus activation each turn. So that was pretty much the only Avarice and Greed play this game, this tournament.
So have you sort of followed the commentary around the US Nationals and the idea that, you know, they tend to sort of represent a more melee-oriented 7-activation style of play? I mean, do you have anything to sort of say in that regard?
I think it's fine, for sure. But I guess a smart fisherman player or pinwise player could use this to his favor, I guess, because they can score pretty fast. Huh. Like, 1 or 2 goals a turn are pretty much standard, I think so.
Yeah, we haven't seen a lot of pinwise play. Don't tend to see a lot of engineers represented. So, I mean, do you have a lot of that where you are?
She's so good. She's such a blast to play. Like these well-oiled machine plays. They're big plays. Like any legendary turn is it used to be a really really big turn. I really like it.
Did you want to talk about that? Like, I find this really interesting because, you know, we haven't seen a lot of Pim Vice. I've played a couple games with her, but I don't have any insight into her at all.
Like pushing your own miniatures, like 12 inches or something like this with teamwork, mm-hmm. momentous actions. And if you're lucky enough to get these plot cards, I don't really one-touch football. If you're lucky to get one-touch football, yeah, it's pretty ridiculous, to be honest. It's like 20, 24 inches of movement with pin vice, and you score a goal afterwards, or score a goal and chain activate into velocity to score another goal or something like this. A pretty huge place.
Yeah,
I guess really like them.
Yeah, I remember looking at it initially when Pinvice was spoiled, and I come from a very goal scoring, so I started with Fish, play a lot of Alkies, and I remember looking at it going, that's like one touch football on everyone. That's fantastic. But I struggled to work out how to get that into one turn. But I can see how obviously you do the character play that gives the order activation straight away. And if you've got a really good position team, if you've built your game around putting them in the right positions, I can see how you can just pinball the ball around and get two goals real quick.
Yeah, for sure. You just you could go for a pass and push Pinvice afterwards, then well-oiled machine token spent, pass the ball back to Pinvice, push her again, then you went like 8 inches or something like this. Then you can speed up yourself for 11 inches of movement and go for a goal like... These are 29 inches or something like this. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. I mean, because we've spoken to a few different and, delved into these different metas and how, some people's perception, I can't remember which interview it was, but had that those character players all do damage and it's actually quite limiting. But if you, in terms of the skill, or in terms of the power curve of engineers, if you... manufactured that one turn where you've got everything kind of humming at once, you can see how powerful it would be. Absolutely. So no, I'd love to see that. I don't think we've got too many. Well, as Dave said before, we haven't really met any or come into any Pim Vice players here. We've got an engineers player, Sean, who's pretty good. Dave's played a bit, but it'd be good to see. Have you got a Pim Vice player who's pretty good in your meta, in your local one?
No, I don't have anyone, because we're on the engineer side of the game. We're pretty fresh, I guess. So I got like 30 or 40 games with them. Our other local player got 30, 40 or 50 games with them. So it's not like me playing morticians or a friend of mine playing fisherman for 200 games or something like this. But we're heading into it. We're heading into it in a pretty big way.
I'm still blown away by how many games you guys end up playing. I'm pretty consistent in my two games a week. So the 300 odd that you've clocked up is it's pretty good.
I guess it's like 350 in a year or something like this. Huh?
Man,
I guess one a day.
Yeah, that's impressive. Yeah. Yeah, I normally manage at least two or three games a week on Vassal, and then two, on a table. But man, I mean, are you translucent from lack of sunlight?
Yeah, I might be.
I like it, man. I'm building a mental picture of you, just like. You're fucking see-through and you're fueled by alcohol. It's brilliant.
It's got some kind of intravenous drip going on.
You're a vampire. Oh, man. Yeah. So you're excited for Worlds? You've got your free ticket? You've got your golden ticket?
Yeah.
Man.
I'm pretty excited, man.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to play there.
What other teams do you play? I mean, you play Morts, but what else do you play?
Yeah, Engineers, Hunters, Butchers, and Archers.
Right
now.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
I would just suggest play anything, but just play drunk. It sounds like that's, you know, kind of the optimal win condition that you've got going on.
Yeah, I might have a beer or 12 or something like this on the words.
Mm.
I'm pretty excited, to be honest.
Yeah, I bet, mate. I bet. Yeah, it's nothing like a free holiday. We've said it before to other people we've spoken with. It's like nothing like a free holiday. And to play games as well. Like, it's just amazing.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited excited to see the other guys playing their mortician team and something like this, because we got a pretty smallish meta over here in Germany. And I'm pretty eager to see the other guys play.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to pick up on any differences in how they approach the game. Jordan Knack was interesting when we spoke to him, because he'd only been playing Guild Ball for 3 months prior to winning US Nats. And, you know, I don't know how many games that involved, and I know he's got, like, a pretty lengthy background in wargaming and miniature gaming. Yeah.
Did he use a War Machine player or something like this?
Yeah, he's an ex-War Machine player, like, really good one.
I played War Machine, like, 10 years before.
All right.
So, four 10 years.
Right. What faction did you play in War Machine?
Right now I do play Minions with the whole flying snake thing. I don't know if
I've seen that.
Yeah, that's what I did over here at one of these German big major tournaments. And I thought it was so busted I could share it. With Rickard from Sweden.
Ah, Rickard. Something
like this. Yep. These laser-guided throws are way too strong. Way too strong.
Yeah, that guy's a mad dog from what I've seen. Didn't he take out, like, a major tournament with Minions or something a year ago or something?
Yeah, he did it last year.
Last year.
I'm trying to remember which one it was. It was like a Lock and Load or one of them. Yeah.
Ah, good on him.
Yeah, I met him over here again at the Heavy Metal Days in Germany. And there I went for like 5 games with the Flying Snake. And he liked it. And he just evolved the whole idea with the squid gun thing, throwing your own Swamp Horror, war passing it, and stuff like this.
Yeah, we were playing pretty consistently up until Mark III dropped. I mean,
me too.
Been playing Guild Ball for, I don't know, a couple months before that, pretty much shifted over, so haven't played since then.
Same here.
Yeah.
I just got like 10 games or something like this in War Machine, just to practice games with the WTC guys over here.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Just playing the Flying Snake stuff.
Yeah. And I like this. It feels like a phallic metaphor.
The Flying Snake.
Totally cool with that.
Yeah. The one I used was pink. So,
That's fantastic.
I was just going to ask Tim about the overall kind of health of the game. Obviously, the game's quite new, and we know that we will be getting Season 3 next year, and that's usually an opportunity that Steamforge used to tighten things up and, you know, mess around with a few things. But Tim, if you were going to change anything, or would you change anything about the game, and is there anything you think that's not completely balanced?
I think there are some minor fixes I would do, like dropping silence influence to 2, or some minor tweaks on Obolus to just take him down a bit. So I think he's pretty good right now, but I do think that meters is as well, or rage could need a minor nerf, I guess. Mist
is it normal rage or veteran rage?
The normal rage, I guess.
Normal rage, yep.
I think he's too efficient for what he's doing. So he can do his 4 attacks with 4 momentum. Or just killing stuff or tooling up people like Obolus or something like this. He might be a bit too good.
Yeah.
to be honest.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I've taken a shining to Veteran Rage, and my only disappointment with Veteran Rage is the fact that I can't take Normal Rage as well in the same team.
Yeah, I guess so, huh?
Yeah, I mean, in a standard kind of Union lineup, I would you'd take a Normal Rage, and I mean, Veteran Rage is fantastic, but I do miss that one influence for four momentums. Such a good trade-off.
But to be honest, I think Blackheart could need a little nerf too, because he basically can do anything, everything. He's a really good brawler. He got double dodges on two or one, I guess.
Yeah.
Commanding aura.
He's debunked.
Yeah, he's awesome. He helps his team, and he can do it himself as well.
Oh, yeah, he can. Great for sure.
Case. Yeah.
Yes, there's some minor tweaks. But overall, I think the game is pretty good balanced. Might be the best right now to play on tournaments.
Wow, okay.
That's what we want to hear.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you, man. Like, you know, for all that we've kind of joked about Obulus breaking the game, you know, the reality is it's a game that's still heavily based on player skill in terms of outcomes. Like, a good player is nearly always going to win against somebody less able.
Yeah, for sure. I think Obulus isn't as broken as everybody says, to be honest. I think he might need a little nerf, like that he doesn't get the refund for Puppet Master or something like this, or just changing tool up to friendly guild model or something like this, so Rage couldn't tool up him would be a pretty good point as well.
Yeah, I got the receiving end of that the other night. Dave and I played, and I played my Vet Rage list into Obulus. I actually asked for the matchup, and Dave did all the right things, tooled up Obulus, and proceeded to just kill Gutter, straight up kill, and without any trouble. And yeah, at that point I went, yeah, okay, there is a disparity there, or a bit of an OP, given you can give him 8 influence, or yeah, you can give him the tooled up. Either way you look at it, it's pretty gross. Like, you didn't have any issues at all killing him, did you, Dave?
No, it was like carving butter with a hot knife, really. Yeah, it felt
I
good.
I think these minor things could do it. So I don't really think you need a major nerf on Morticians or any other faction, to be honest.
Mm. We spoke to Jamie Perkins, and Jamie basically acknowledged that the Puppet Master thing was something that came in at the end of playtesting and probably shouldn't have rolled out in the way that it did. So come season 3, I reckon, you know, those minor tweaks that you're talking about will probably be introduced. And they will be quite reasonable.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to do the PP trick on us and, you know, do a nerf pre any major tournaments or anything like that. So I was going to ask, Tim, do you have any Hunters players, given that they're a bit newer and your meta's relatively small? Do you get to play into Hunters much?
Not too much. I'm playing them by myself a bit.
Oh, you like them, yep.
But I don't regularly play against them.
Sorry, you do like playing them?
Yeah, for sure. They got pretty similar controllish. Controllish kind of playstyle, I guess. It's like you slow your enemy down, just focusing some players down, and get your goals if you can do without enforcing it, I guess.
Yeah.
You're just grinding the enemy down. A pretty sweet place in there. Mm-hmm. I really like them.
Absolutely. Do you given that you like the scoring way or style with Obulus, do you find that's a bit more of a challenge with the Hunters because they don't have, you know, as good a out and out strikers like a Mist or anything like that? Like, they've got good strikers, but nothing completely, you know, massive.
Yeah, I think so. It's definitely a lot harder to get your goals in there with Hunters, but I really like the old overall options you get over there. Like any hunter player is a good player. Every hunter player is a good player. I messed up. Basically find with taking any of the hunter players, you got a pretty good team, I think.
Yeah, do you have any particular favorites?
I really like the bear.
Yeah.
That's a common theme.
I don't like his back foot. His back foot looks a bit janky, but his playbook looks amazing. It's great.
It's a freaking bear.
Exactly.
Yeah. I kind of like trying to get two takeouts with him as well, like if I'm playing him.
I did like four takeouts in a game with him, so it's nothing unusual to do. The whole team is supporting Cena at this moment, so you stall the game, Midnight offering forwards, then lowering the defense of the enemy player you're trying to go for, and just chew him up. After this, get this advantage on momentum. After this, to chew another one.
Well, that's interesting.
I want to play some hunters.
You're all in, are you, Cam? You're gonna.
Oh man, yeah. I've played like three games of them badly. But yeah, the idea of a bear just mauling someone is fantastic on a football field.
He's a great model.
They're pretty hard to play, to be honest. I think they are one of the hardest teams right now. Because you have so many synergies and so many options that it's pretty hard to get the best one. I think.
Yeah, you can get sidetracked into trying to make all the moving pieces work as opposed to just doing something efficient.
Yeah,
I like them. I struggle with them. But yeah, they're probably my. They're probably the most fun team to play for me, I think.
I think from the outside, looking in, and I've seen Dave play quite a bit of them, the difference I see in them versus some of the other ones is I think there are some matchups that they don't go in, heavily favoured, and that's where they will struggle, whereas there are, teams like an Obulus list can go into pretty much any matchup looking pretty good, and you don't. Yeah, it's more about your skill and your ability to play the game. Whereas I just think there's a couple with the hunters that I reckon just are bad matchups.
Yeah, which matchups should be bad? I don't.
Well, I think. Well, we've played, and this may be just my completely biased opinion with alchemists, but I find. If I can play, I like the smoke matchup into them, whether that's an imbalance against them, but I really like playing smoke into them. You can just slow them down, get all the conditions all over them, keep the bear back. But then I'm not sure how many times we've played that, Dave, with Cena, so that might be a completely different kind of scenario.
I find they struggle into brewers and sometimes into butchers. Because they just they can't win that fight in the middle. They've got to be like selective in how they go in and take out players, and once those lines join, it gets really hard for them.
I think these are one of the best matchups for Hunter, to be honest. I really like these controlish picky kind of player, like you go in with JSR, just shutting down one player at a time and pinning another one, dropping your forest like in front of them, guts and string someone else. I really like it, to be honest.
I think what it points out is like I'm just really shit at hunters. Maybe your next level, mate.
No. I wouldn't say so, but I think I'm used to play against butchers and brewers because that's my daily bread and butter with morticians, and they have a pretty similar attempt to play against them, I guess.
It's just getting
a favor, an unfair brawl in the middle. It's the same with morticians. You just pick one player. kill him and then go for a 6-versus-5 fight in the middle. And you can do this with hunters as well, I think.
You know, Tim, I'm going to meditate on those words and think about how to play hunters differently.
Roll dice better, play better.
Yeah, roll dice better, you know, make good choices. Don't make bad choices. Yeah.
Make the right choices.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what they are.
It's a good approach to do things.
Yeah, yeah. Don't be shit. Yeah. No, that's,
drink when you play. It's the German one.
Yeah, I'm not drunk enough, clearly. I mean, you know, I feel like I'm not embracing my my culture as an Australian properly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have a few Fosters. You're up.
Yeah, fucking Fosters, no. God. Yeah, so I don't know. What else? I don't really have any other questions. Like, I'm pretty much asked everything that I wanted to. Did you have anything else you wanted to say, Tim? Like, did you have any sort of commentary or
not really. It was a blast. It was a blast. First podcast, by the way, to be on.
Oh, man, you're coming back on this one. You're a fucking champ. Well, we're gonna do like some follow up after Worlds. So like we'll if you're keen, we'll give you a buzz and you know, have a chat.
After I embarrassed myself to the maximum level while getting fucked drunk at the Worlds. So
if you don't have a story about how you had to play in your soiled pants. Like, if you haven't shit yourself at the table, then I don't see what we've got to talk about.
Yeah, go big or go home.
Man, I think
I definitely want some drunken stories after the Worlds. You owe it to us now. I think you owe it to the Guild Ball community, actually.
I'm enjoying this kind of. This visceral approach to it. You know, we spoke to Jordan Knack. I would characterize him as an intellectual. I'm not saying you're not, Tim, but I'm saying that, like, I feel that, like, your approach to Guild Ball is coming directly out of your stomach / loins.
Yeah.
I like it.
To be honest, I'm a scientist. I'm a scientist by myself as well, so... but you don't need to be dumb to get drunk.
You do realize we're going to soundbite that and put it like fantastic. It's been a pleasure, Tim. It's been awesome, mate.
Yeah, it was.
We're dead keen to get you back on, man. And like, best of luck at Worlds. I hope it rolls out really well for you.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Mate, you're a champ. Thanks a heap.
Yeah, pleasure.
Kaboom! With a bit of background noise tonight, I reckon.
Wet
old Adelaide.
It's wet.
Yeah. That'd be good though. It's always a good night to go up gaming when you've when it's rainy outside.
Man, you're just pumped because you've been stuck in the house.
Oh yeah, I'm pumped to get out.
Stuck at work.
This is what happens when you work for yourself.
And have children,
and yeah. Yeah, so no. We carbo back up to HH tonight, Harlequin Halls, to get our fix. There's a few different matchups. We're both kind of looking to get out pre the champs. So yeah.
So you have a somewhat tumescent fixation on veteran rage at the moment.
I do. I did jump around a bit when I was in between Fisherman and my Alkies, and then I played a little bit of Hammer and a bit of Vet Rage, and I've gone back to Vet Rage. Was that... I'm not sure if it was at your request or whether I just kind of wanted to play him, and then the love affair has been rekindled. He's just straight up awesome.
Yeah, I like him.
And I guess with the fact that I play a lot of the Union models with Alkies anyway, it was a pretty straightforward kind of plug and play, so...
Yeah.
He has that level of superpower that you like to have in a captain that can basically take someone down. But it's also things like QuickTime are just fantastic tools.
And
you've got your mists, your gutters, and your decimates in your side.
Yes, yeah. And Red Fury gives you some tactical flexibility as well.
Absolutely.
You know, he looks like a point-and-click captain, but I don't think you have to play him that way.
No. And the side, I played it a couple of times last week, which is Vet Rage, Coin, and then, as I basically just said, Gutter, Decimate, Mist, and then you take Avarice and Greed for the activation. I mean, you could throw in a Fang Tooth or something like that. I think you want some other kind of big guy in the middle. But it's a good all-round list. It comes with 12 influence, and then you've got the extra one effectively from Coin who can dish it out, plus the bonus time. It's
a plus Rage's Furious Charge as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, canny players will try to, you know, take that off you, but usually the best way to take that off is to get in Rage's grill, and unlike normal Rage, you know, Vet Rage can have four influence on him, so if you want to get up in his grill, he's going to put you down pretty quick. So,
yeah, and I guess quick time, it's a 2-inch dodge from memory, is that right?
Yep, absolutely.
So, you know, if he's tied up by a 1-inch melee model, he can dodge out and get his charge off if he wants it.
Absolutely.
You know, so that limits the type of player that can actually take that option away from him.
Yeah, I compare him to Hammer in certain respects in terms of that Wrecking Ball super solo.
Mm-hmm.
I think the positives that he has above Hammer is his abilities or buffs don't come from sacrificing influence on your own team. Because the main, and maybe I haven't played Hammer enough, but my main issue with him was always, yeah, he has his super solo activation, and even if you don't really strip your team down, you're still taking an influence here and there. You're really limiting what mallets or chisels, you know, some of the other models are actually going to end up doing. And I find that really just hinders your game.
Yeah. Well, as an Obulus player, I don't mind seeing mallet hindered. That guy's a fucking train.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, how about yourself? What are you rolling out, Steven?
Well, I think you've told me what you wanted to play into.
I like to play into the best, so, you know.
Yeah, a bit more Throbulous tonight. I got to say, man, I've been playing a lot of him. Played him on Vassal a bit this week.
Oh, nice. Into what kind of matchups?
Into Fillet. And I actually used Casket, so I used a bit of a different lineup. At Alex Bott's recommendation, he made a post on our episode 4 post on the forums, and he basically said, like, Casket's a great tech piece into Fillet, as are some other fat guys. So I took Ovulus, Dirge, Silence, Casket, Ghast, Avarice and Greed. That's 6. Yeah.
Triple fat boy.
Yeah, but the great thing is that team runs at 13 influence. So, you know, you just, it's like fucking amazing.
Well, 13, and if you're Puppet Master or anything, you effectively get one back anyway, so.
Yeah. So, it was really good. Fillet's really struggled to get through all that meat.
So, is that what you're perceiving as, it is Fillet's basic crutch, is not, you're not being able to get through, like, a bunch of boxes in a turn? And you just bog it down? Is that the kind of best
tip? Well, you may remember all the way back to episode 1 when I played Fillet into Michael playing Obulus with, I think he had a similar lineup, but he had Fangtooth in place of Avarice and Greed.
And you bounced off.
And I bounced right off.
Yeah.
So clearly Michael was ahead of the curve there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It seems good. And so is it, do those extras fit in, probably, but fit into your 9 roster for a championship event?
They fit very comfortably. I've always liked Casket. Like, the more I play him, the more I like him. I think Heavy Burden can be clutch, and Ghostly Visage really does blunt. It blunts a charge, especially on, like, turn 1 when, you know, really the best way to get in on a model is to use a charge. So Ghostly Visage reduces charge distance by 4 inches, and it drops 2 tack off the model charging.
Yeah.
So, you know, it starts to either take away the viability of charging in terms of distance, or the likelihood that they're going to get to the higher results in their playbook. You know, it makes that charge bonus half as effective. So it's just really good.
Absolutely.
and then you add Rough Ground. So
yeah,
he's a great piece.
Plus, it's heroic. Oh, sorry, legendary.
He's legendary. Yeah. Yep.
So, which is never. I mean, 4-point play. It's pretty clutch. Like, you know, scoring goal at the end of the game. It's pretty good.
Yeah, and you can usually reliably set it up.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've heard a few people, and whether they're just not haven't done it a lot, or talk about that it's difficult to trigger. Now, do you find that, like, triggering his legendary, or you just, as long as you set it up and you know what to look for, then you can get
it? Yeah, you've just got to build for it. I mean, actually having a lineup with Avarice and Greed helps as well, because you can leave him to last and give him the best possible chance of, you know, getting that legendary off, getting that takeout in the circumstances that he needs to.
So the extra activation.
Yeah, it can be relevant, and you know, sometimes you just don't need it.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's good. I like him. So I'll probably, if you're playing Rage, I'm more inclined to play. If you're playing Veteran Rage, I'm more inclined to play Rage, normal Rage, in my list, because I feel like Tooled Up is more valuable.
Yeah, absolutely.
In that matchup.
Absolutely.
And also, I've noticed Obi really struggles to take out even targets like marbles. So I played this game the other night, and I'd given him 8, and he was smacking fuck out of marbles, and he just fell short by 1, because, you know, like, if you're hitting a model that's 4-1, he's not reliably going to hit that momentous 2.
No, absolutely.
And yeah, having Tooled Up means that first result in his playbook is doing 2 damage. It's way better.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I find that with, you know, when I play Midas, being able to steal Tooled Up, I don't have that as a problem. And a lot of people actually, when they're opposing Midas, they'll obviously take Scything Blow off the table. They won't play models with that. They usually don't like where they go, but they'll play it if they, you know, need mist or whatever. But Tooled Up, they don't tend to bother taking off the table. And I love it, because that with his heroic, you can basically get, you know, 3 damage on the 1. Like, yeah. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So just, and then it just takes a lot of the numbers out of the game in terms of killing people. So
I do dislike Midas.
Yes. Yeah. It's why I like him so much.
Also, unmasking, he can get some work done with that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're talking about also rolling out some hunters after a little chat we had the other night?
Yeah, like talking to Jamie P. Man, he just got me thinking. Like, obviously he is, you know, he is the original hunter, and just listening to the way he was talking about playing Hearn, I haven't really experimented a lot with Hearn's threat ranges, particularly like kicking off with him on first turn. So something I like to play around with a bit more.
He did have that landing in the deployment zone kind of tech first turn, which I loved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's a pretty reliable goal kick as well. Like, he's 3, I think he's 3-4.
Yeah.
But out of all of the hunters, you know, he's one of the better options.
Yeah, and you kind of want him probably scrumming it up that end of the park, because, yeah, if you want a snapshot opportunity, he's going to be one of your better options, isn't he? So
yeah.
Not that hunters necessarily play that way.
Yeah, but if you get him down near the goal, you know, they've got to deal with him. Because he can tie up a lot of models with that 2-inch melee.
Yeah, and singled out, you know, you're basically lining up models for cards to just kill the fuck out of.
Yep.
That's happy fun times.
Oh, my God, I love Jay Carr.
Yeah.
I love him.
He's fantastic. It was interesting chatting to Jamie, and the what I noticed, or what he kind of implied, was, you know, the way they developed J-Car wasn't like, you know, we want a Decimate-style model, but it did end up that way, which I found quite interesting in terms of, probably Decimate on steroids, in terms of, you know, the way the playbook looks, the ability to move around.
And also, like, it sounded like at that point in the design process they've gone, well, we don't have a reliable damage dealer.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Decimate's kind of a good chassis for that approach. You know, she's got momentous results on everything.
Yeah, and they both got
2 damage reliably is great.
2 damage, anatomical, which means, you know, getting to that 2 damage on the 2 is pretty easy. So.
Man, I love spiking that 4 on his playbook. I'm pretty sure it's momentous. I'm pretty sure the 3's not momentous. Jesus!
Driving
it's so
puddles.
Wet!
Through puddles.
It is so wet.
Oh, I love it.
Good thing you got like an SUV, huh?
Yeah.
makes it a bit easier.
Otherwise we drown.
Yeah, so yeah, I'll play some Obulus tonight, and if we get time for a second game, I'll play some Hunters.
Nice. Yeah, I do have a fascination. Well, I guess I just want to train up against, you know, the best kind of lists, so that's why I want to play into Obby. I figure I'm bound to play against someone with an Obulus list in the Nationals up at the Big Blue, so...
Yeah.
See what happens. I'm still undecided as to what I take. Obviously, I've got a lot more muscle memory with the Alkies, but I don't know. I just find Vet Rage appeals to me, and it all just kind of clicks in terms of the way I like to play the game. So,
Yeah, man. And there's, like, that list you've been running, there's not a single bad model. Like, all of those Union players are good.
Yeah, well, they're all models that you take hands down in any other list, too.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, it's enough to make you want to play Union, maybe.
Yeah. I probably should, maybe I'll try this out next week, is test out Strongbox and see how he goes. I like the idea of having confidence, just on some of the things, like, you know, being able to throw it on gutter for the chain grab if you want to, you know, re-roll.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's a single dice, though, so I don't know how good that is. Or a Vet Rage charge is gangbusters, so, you know, guaranteeing a whole bunch more hits on that, or at least, you know, tipping the dice in your favour on that. I can see that as pretty awesome too, so...
Yep, it's legit.
Definitely some tech worth exploring there.
I love me some confidence.
Yeah. On a turtle.
Confident turtles.
Confident turtles.
The best kind. Man, I went to the Royal Show last night.
Oh, brilliant.
And there were some Ninja Turtles wandering around. They're pretty cool, man. I had some good looking suits.
Cosplay?
No, these were just like hired goons wandering around dressed as Ninja Turtles.
Nice. So for anyone, the Royal Show, or anyone in Australia would know what the Royal Show is, but it's kind of just like a moving around theme show, theme park kind of show. It's originally an agricultural show where, you know, you get to see livestock and that kind of thing, you know, painting competitions and cake cooking. Did you get your cake in?
Yeah, we went and had a look at the contest pavilion. So they had a whole bunch of stuff, you know, like cakes and needlepoint, leatherwork, and like a bit of metalwork.
You didn't enter any crochet this year? Or?
No, it's the arthritis. It's really getting in the way.
It's hard work, so my eyes just aren't what they used to
No,
be,
so. me neither. Hmm. Me neither. So yeah, I'm probably just going to go back to the wood chopping, I think.
Oh, love the wood chopping.
Better with something big and heavy than something small and delicate.
Brilliant. Yeah, now we'll be taking the little ones on the weekend, probably, you know, spend a whole bunch of money on meaningless crap. And
here's how you know you're getting older, right? Like, instead of buying a show bag, I went to like the gourmet food tent and bought some just like fuck off jerky, like really nice beef jerky, man. And I got home and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm old.
Yeah, but there's value there.
You know? Yeah,
better than spending, you know, $25 on, you know, $10 worth of plastic crap that's gonna fall apart.
I just couldn't stomach a bag of sugar. That's what got me. I looked at it all and I'm like, there is nothing here I want.
Nah, agreed.
Yeah. Actually, would have been better off with like a Ninja show bag.
Yeah, you could have been one of the Ninja Turtles.
Man, I am in my heart.
Nice.
Donatello's my favourite turtle.
Technology side of things.
Yeah, like, and he's, you know, he goes for the intellect. He's a control player, right?
See, I always liked Michelangelo because I was like someone that liked fart-assing around. You know, the Joker.
That's
likes pizza.
Likes pizza.
You know.
Yep.
Sums me up, really.
Yeah, so, man, I do hope we get two games in tonight.
Running clock, I think. And this, you know, advice for anyone out there, if you can, and if your opponent, you know, is that mid-tier or mid to upper tier and they don't mind playing clock, seriously play it every time you can. I remember when we chatted to Jordan Nat about, you know, the fact that he had chess clock experience playing chess, but and how he's never clocked out in a game of War Machine or Guild Ball. Just helps how quickly your decision making and, you know, those trees of thought and how things are going to roll out and how quickly you can make those decisions are made in your head, and you won't clock out. You clock out and you just start giving up VPs. It's not good.
Yeah, and you get used to the pressure of it as well, which can be really important. Like, when you're sort of down to the wire your last 3 minutes in a tournament game, man, you start to feel it.
What was that one against Big Daz from Nerdvana Games? In the last tourney, I reckon you basically went right at the end. You clocked him, and it was just good time management, but you were both chewed, you know, well and truly into the clock. Like, most of the points were scored in the last 5-7 minutes of the game.
Yeah, that's right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, having sort of practiced with that sense of pressure, like, just helps your decision-making when you're under it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Clock, man. Clock.
It's a thing. It's all about time.
Yep. All right, so we are just about there.
We're about to roll up, and then we'll do a bit of a recap, as usual, on how I had Obulus.
Yeah, well, I think tonight's the night. Back in the car.
We're back. Good night.
Good night, yeah.
Good night playing lots of gaming. There's a lot of people there, which was pretty good.
Yeah. I sold some more of my Kator stuff.
Oh, nice.
Happy with that.
No, yeah. I got rid of a bit of the Evil War machine as well, some of mine. Yeah. So, you know, helping fund my other addictions. So.
Yeah, sometimes I think I want to play War Machine again. Like, I'm looking at Rhett and I'm going, maybe, but then... It's kind of like being in an abusive relationship. Like, you think it's going to be better.
And then you don't know when they're just going to hit you again and just abuse you some more. So,
yeah.
Nah.
Yeah, fool me once, I can't get fooled again.
No, absolutely.
Man, so Vet Rage, he wrecked some face.
He's a legitimate threat.
Yep.
Very good. So the team I played, we played the matchup that we talked about, the Obulus versus Vet Rage. I played Vet Rage, Coin, Avarice and Greed, Gutter, Decimate and Mist, which is just a really solid side. Mm. I guess has all the tools that you're looking for in a team. You know, if you sat down and wrote what you wanted in a team, you want kind of a half-decent captain that can put out some damage, you want a good striker and a few kind of mid-area players, a bit of a beater, and it just has all that. And Coin, obviously, is potentially one of the best mascots in the game. So.
Yeah, yep. He's got that 2-inch melee. Yeah. All comes down to that booty.
He's
got that long tail, man. He knows how to swing it.
Yeah, I love that. Well, I love how they're both the snakes now. So Naja's also got a 2-inch melee as well. So.
Yep.
Yeah, so the first one, how did that roll out? You kicked off to me, I believe.
Yeah, I think you won that initiative roll.
Yeah, so then Obby kicked. I collected, tried to kind of camp the ball for a bit, and you were eyeing off an Obby basically coming in.
Yep.
And I messed around with it. I'm just trying to remember what I did. I was basically lining to move it right over for a missed goal at some point.
Yeah, I think you picked the ball up with Decimate.
Yep.
Passed it back to... Was it Avarice? To Gutter.
Yes.
Yeah, and then you were trying to work it down the line. So it got to Rage.
Yep.
Rage tried to kick it to Mist and missed the pass. No, so, but I think you still probably could have got Mist up there to get the goal.
Yeah. I mean, I was basically trying to angle, and this is probably the main mistake I did this turn, so barring all the dicking around with the ball, because you're trying to camp it and do silly things like that to stop Obulus from, you know, kicking it back to himself, was I charged Gutter in into Obulus, tried to drag him in to then bring him into threat range of other models. And Obulus tooled up. By this time, we'd had enough activations that you'd managed to tool him up.
Yep.
He just straight kills Gutter at that point.
Yep,
so I go
wrecked
down.
Face.
And then we kind of converge. So turn two, you line up how it's going to, you know, roll out in the middle, and it becomes a bit of a fist fight. Ghast came right up. I think I baited him in, or you charged him in next turn.
Yeah.
And what I found was I was able to get enough around Ghast, and with Vet Rage's heroic up. I think I used the legendary because I didn't really use the momentum. It was just Rap City. We singled out, a couple of crowd outs. He just was printing momentum and then put Ghast down. So,
yep. Which actually put Gast in an interesting position. Like, so Campbell had worked, missed up the board.
My left, your
yeah,
right.
Yeah, my right, quite deep. But, yeah, Gast came on and basically, like, took the ball, which was loose.
Well, I dropped it thinking that
Obi would puppet Marcy.
And it was later in the turn that I took out Gast, and that's when Gast came on perfectly to just snap the ball.
Yeah, smashed it, got it back to Obulus.
Yeah.
And this is like where I got, oh man, I got super sad. I fucking moved the ball in that turn from Gast, who was like all the way back in the deployment zone. He punched and missed a bit, kicked the ball to space, but it deviated and snapped to Obi. And then Obi went in, charged Avarice, I think it was, and basically went from maybe 4 inches off the deployment line to within goal shooting distance.
So with dodges and...
Yeah. Dodges and, you know, his shadow-like and the sprint or the charge itself. Took a shot on goal. Like, he worked all the way down, you know, took a shot on goal, missed on his three-dice shot, which, you know, happens sometimes, but I think that was probably game right there, because the momentum pretty much swung in Campbell's favour.
Yeah.
He was at 4, I would have gone to 6, but, you know, being on 2 and having rage up in my throat.
And you'd already legendaried at this point?
I had already legendaried.
You legendaried early, which I was happy with, but I think it was the right thing to do when you did it as well. Mm. Like, it took enough off me. I think it muted one of my kind of moves at that point. But yeah, nonetheless, the ball kind of sat there, and it killed the momentum, the back and forth, and I was winning that fist fight in the middle, and also Obulus was out of position, effectively.
Yeah.
So I kind of, next turn, I knew I was just going to wreck face and kill the next model, which I think was Rage, was it?
Yep.
Which was fine, and so I did that, allowing you the opportunity to score the goal, but knowing that, you know, as soon as you kick it back in, you've probably got your
6-point activation or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So then, that's pretty much what happened. We kind of postured a little bit. You didn't take it straight away, and I didn't want the ball either. I wanted to come back out off the goal kick. So I allowed that to kind of happen. And then missed to basically bounce off it towards the end of the turn and, you know, score a goal there.
Yeah, I think what happened, like, the following turn, I'll be... killed Greed, got the ball off Coin, who had the ball after the bounce-off goal. Tackled Coin, killed Greed, shot a goal, and then you slotted it back out, missed, picked it up, and just ran and scored with it. And I think it was one more takeout, wasn't it?
And I went to 10 points at that point. I don't think... I still had Rage to go in that turn.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure I was going to wreck... wreck face in the middle, and even if I didn't, I was going to get to enough momentum, and because your legendary was off the table at that point, that I was going to get first activation.
Yeah, and we just called it, didn't we? That's what happened.
Yeah.
A little bit tired.
Well, and also, it's a little bit of a drive back and forth each time we kind of go up there. We like to get in as much gaming as we possibly can, so we basically then, you know, put the cues, re-racked and went again. And so we played the matchup again. And this time I kicked to you, I believe, with Vet Rage.
Yeah, I received. I didn't get the ball though, because I didn't have anything nearby that could get it. I think Obulus was the only one who could get the ball that second game.
And you didn't want to go early.
And I didn't want to go early with him, and, you know, I let you get the ball. I think missed,
yeah, so
got
yeah,
it.
Missed, did the weather go sprint and came back with it and kind of parked it behind himself, so. But the big difference here is kicking with Vet Rage. I put him out there. You took advantage of that and basically, it took a while, but, you know, engineered a killing him.
Yeah, sort of used Puppet Master to drag him in. You know, got enough momentum to win the next turn, and then basically just neutered him, killed him that second turn. And then we sort of rolled into turn 3, and I think... In turn 3, or was it in turn 2 that I legendary?
No, turn 3. So turn 3, I tried to turn the tempo back. So I was doing quite a bit of singling out with Avarice. I think he's fantastic in that lineup with your decimates and your gutters, because you get the rat. And so 2 momentum off 1 influence is just huge.
Yeah.
And I was getting heaps. I kind of knew you were going to, you know, so at this point, you killed Vet Rage off, so with turn 3. I
I knew you were going to try to strip the momentum off me, but I pretty much healed everything I could heal. And I was doing a few little bits and pieces, but I got to about 8 momentum, and then you had the ball. You basically dealt with Mist up the board after I kind of got through and scored one goal.
Yeah.
And yeah, it kind of got to a point where that middle fight was getting lost. And this is the big kind of takeaway message I got from it, was the Vet Rage into Obulus, whoever's winning that middle fight is the one will probably come out on top. You know, the ball they'll probably go goal for goal, you know, if the ball's ping-ponging back and forth. But that middle fight was crucial. In this one, you obviously dealt with Rage, and without Rage, I'm not putting models down as fast. Mm. I mean, Decimate and Gutter did a fair bit of work. There was one point at which I had Ghast singled out, knocked down. Gutter had 4, and I'd already triggered the extra influence on the fear on
Rising Anger.
Not the Rising Anger. Fear on it.
Yep.
And I'd lined up having your Everest and Silence within the Scything Blow, but I'd stuffed up with Decimate and had Decimate there as well. So I could have triggered, I think, 3 Scything Blows. I think I picked 2, burnt a momentum to heal Decimate. Oh, sorry, 2 momentum to heal Decimate. But I reckon I could have done that little bit more damage. It would have been 9 on Silence, which would have been huge.
Yeah, wouldn't have quite taken him out, but...
No.
Yeah, really.
Potentially enough, and then I think you stole it towards the end of that turn and used it to basically heal those models, you know, not up fully, but got... at least got Ghast back to kind of healthy, you know, into the teens.
Yeah.
And at that point, took the next turn, came in, killed Gutter, and it was pretty much all she wrote. Like, I didn't have any...
Yeah, middle. Yeah. So, like, that last turn, Silence went first. I gave him 3 influence. He punched a knockdown Gutter, I think it was.
Yep.
So Ghast had knocked it down the turn before. Punched a knockdown Gutter, generated some momentum, did a bit of damage. Then threw a shutout onto Vet Rage, bonus timing it with the momentum, and that meant that he wasn't, you know, I could basically play the game that I wanted. And then I tucked Avarice, who had like 1 influence on him, so, you know, no big deal.
Well, the big thing there was he couldn't punch, he was knocked down, couldn't punch Ghast,
so he had to punch Silence.
And he's -1 because Ghast's engaging him, so he's...
Yeah, needing 5s. Yeah. So I thought that was
good,
you know,
play.
Like just classic control from, you know, from Silence, and a good way to buy yourself some breathing space to set up an optimal activation, because as it stood, Silence was in a charge lane that Rage potentially had 2 yeah. Gutter. So what it let me do was, like, you know, force Campbell to take a suboptimal move with Avarice next, and then send in Rage basically delete Gutter.
And Gutter was fully loaded, because at that point I needed to get all the damage in the middle I could, so I kind of knew that someone was going to die, but I had to load them up and just see what happened. Normal Rage came in and just obliterated Gutter. And at that point, yeah, it wasn't looking too good.
And it was getting late as well.
So we were pretty sure that was getting in that way. So we basically caught it there. So that's good. I mean, it's much about the lessons that we kind of learned.
So my big takeaway was, you know, try and isolate Veteran Rage.
Yep.
You know, don't let him get his Furious Charge off. But also, I mean, like, it's such a fucking pain in the ass. Like, Gutter is a pain. Decimate is a pain. Avarice is a pain. Mist is a pain. Like, there's nothing bad in that team.
No, it is a very strong team. So I'm loving them at the moment. And it's nice. It's a little bit, like, fresh compared to the other stuff I've been playing.
Yep.
But also, you know, I know a lot of those models, and, you know, I know what to put on each of them. It's pretty easy each turn.
Man, that Gutter is such a good player.
Oh, and I love... I mean, Vet Rage, so even if you do go in on him, you had to really pick when you did it, because Rising Anger, like, you know, 2 momentum. I love that. Like,
yeah, that's true.
It's just like, oh, thanks, I'll take 2 more momentum. And I reckon in that first game, there was a point at which I think you did damage him.
And I forgot about Rising Anger.
And that gave me 2, which I reckon tipped the dice roll for turn in my favour.
Yeah, totally did.
So, it was a good night, a lot of lessons learnt. So,
if I ever play anybody playing Vet Rage, I'm going to write Rising Anger on my hand.
Yes.
It's easy to forget.
And then they play Harry the Hat. I was actually tempted to throw Harry out there. It would have been a bit of fun. Just to, I know Deno loves to where he has talked about having the double rising anger kind of list. That's an interesting idea. Honestly, I've now thought about Harry that much because I'd love to like see him play more. I reckon if you gave him two influence instead of one, because he's a 1-4, one of the main reasons I don't want to put him in is because you go down in your influence pool. Like, if you actually had two, like, if he's contributing the same amount, you're kind of like, I can handle that because he's not reducing the rest of my team.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know I crap on about, like, 2-inch melee and things like that, but I reckon just even two influence might be enough.
Yeah, I hear in Season 3 he's going to be rebalanced and he's going to have a puppet master.
And a bigger hat.
And tooled up. Yep.
Brilliant.
Yep. And then he's going to, like, sell... He'll sell like hotcakes.
No, no, look, we're not talking about people.
Joking. Just joking.
Brilliant. Yeah. Nah, it was a good night.
Yeah, it was fun, man. I appreciate you, like, going for that second game, because I know you were, you know, you're a bit tired and you're probably a bit over
working
it.
Hard. No, it was good. Look, I don't think you can... Look, I learned... The main takeaway I got from that was, other than the winning that fight in the middle, is I'm not sure I'd kick with Vet Rage. Against Obi. I think you're better off kicking with someone else that, you know, yes, you can lose them, a gutter or someone, but I think Vet Rage is almost like the secondary player. He comes in over the top, so once, because the way his legendary and heroic work, that bloody coin, you need someone else engaged when he does it. So I think that was a bit of a mistake and something I won't do.
Also, how good is Red Fury?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a couple of times where, yeah, I needed, you know, I wanted to go in and gas, but I know it's just crap. He's going to counterattack. You just go, you know, I was already close because the scrum was all tight, and I just, Avarice, you just knock him down for me, or you just single him out for me, and then bang, I get my free charge straight in. There are a few times where I engineered a knockdown to make sure that he got his charge because Gast was already, you know, he's at 2 inches, so he's already engaging me, but as soon as he's knocked down, Rage can go into him, so...
Yeah, I don't know, I just really like that he can spend that influence and get access to stuff that's good on somebody else's playbook.
Yeah, I mean, you could... I was looking for, and now this would be living the dream, but if you can engineer getting gutter in the right spot where you engineer silent blows.
Yeah.
You know, so you get... whether it's, you know, you're lining up high-def models, like I did in the second game, where Silence was near gutter, but you can do this auto-damage by hitting a knockdown Gast or something like that.
Yep.
It's, yeah, happy fun times.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I like the flexibility. Again, like, it's, you know, it broadens out your options, I guess.
Absolutely. In that scrum situation, it's fantastic. I mean, quick time, a couple of times where you know, I could use it to pop out and then get my free charge back in. Which,
oh, man, quick time. So, yeah.
So,
No, it was good. Good games. Good games.
Very good games. Here we are, rolling in.
All right, man. Well, another carball.
That is another solemn carball.
Excellent.
All right.
Red Fury.
Take it easy.
All right, we're back. I'm exhausted after all of that, Campbell.
That was long. It was long and hard. That's why we like it. No, but it was good. I loved the interviews. They were great guys to chat to. You know, Jamie P donating his time to us was massive. So and Tim was an absolute dude. So loose cannon, absolute loose cannon. But dude.
Yeah. No, it's a magical mystery tour. You never know what you're going to get, and I think we've done all right this time.
Yeah, no, and that's half the fun. Yeah. That's why we do this.
So I think we've got to mention that the Australian Nationals is fast approaching, and I think the number of registered players is at around the 20-person mark. So, you know, anybody who's interested in going should probably get in pretty soon, get themselves up to Brisbane. Yep. And that's on the 24th and the 25th of September, is that right?
Yep, I believe so, and that's run by Irresistible Force. And I think our good mate Deno has donated a prize for that.
He has, yeah. Trent has donated a fully painted Hunter's team, And I got to say, like, he's an amazing painter. They look fantastic. That's a lucky door prize, so everybody who attends the tournament is in the running to pick that up. And, you know, if that's not incentive, I don't know what is.
Yeah,
I know that Irresistible Force have put up some photos of that on their Facebook page, and I reckon we'll try and track down some, and we'll tweet it. You know, we'll tweet it through our Twitter handle.
Yep, absolutely.
If you do want to catch us on Twitter, we are at DubDodgeCast. Or you can catch me at scrub_random.
And I'm at Stubby Holders. We always love a chat on Twitter, or just, you know, randomly slinging shit at people. It's all good.
Yeah. All attention is good attention, as we said before. Get in touch with us. Chat on the forums. Chat on Twitter. Send us some feedback. Throw your criticism at us. Whatever. We don't care. Love to do it.
We love it.
To hear it. And I guess we will be back for episode 6, and that one's going to be pretty much focused on the Australian Nationals that we're travelling to.
Yeah, absolutely. That'll be a good one. Can't wait.
All right, mate. No worries. I'll talk to you next episode.
All right. Take it easy, man.
All right, mate. Bye.
Bye.